Hi guys, Sharon here. I wanted to take a moment at the top of today's show to invite you to a free online class that I'm teaching on Tuesday, December 5th on how to write the story of you. It's the final part in my You Can Design Yourself webinar series that I've been teaching all this fall, which has been so fun. The focus in the whole series is to inspire you to go after whatever it is that you really want in your work and life. And if you've ever found yourself trying to make sense of how where you've been connects back to where you want to go, this is a great class for you. I will be joined by the lovely and insightful storytellers and entrepreneurs behind StoryMyMedia for this hour-long discussion. You will not want to miss it. To reserve your spot in the class or watch what you've missed in the first two classes, you can head over to pointroadstudios.com/classes. Can't wait to see you there. You ready? You're listening to Design Yourself, a podcast to help you figure out what it is that you want and then make it happen. I'm Sharon Lepofsky. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 69 of Design Yourself. I'm your host, Sharon, and today's guest is Katie Blattner of Three Little Birds Sewing Company in my hometown of Hyattsville, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. She runs this sewing studio, which is just so lovely. If you are in the area or will be in the area, definitely make the trip out, stop in. You will see the most gorgeous fabrics of wide varieties, modern patterns, things that make you nostalgic for childhood, just such lovely things. And if you're lucky, you'll get to meet Katie herself, who is just such a warm spirit, welcomes you in. And I can say, as somebody who had ambitions to be sewing for many years, she got me back into the sewing swing of things. In fact, in the cover art for today's episode, you can see Katie sitting on a seat cushion in my home office, which she helped me make so from fabric from her studio. So anyway, it's what she is doing is just so lovely. She's really created a great community space that just makes you want to get out and get crafty. So beyond just what she's created and how awesome that is, Katie herself is so, God, I mean, she's just so damn wise. There were several times in the interview process where I just kind of found myself lifting outside of me, the interviewer in the process, and thinking, man, this person is just dropping so much insight and inspiring me and how I want to move forward myself. And anyway, I hope that you will have a similar experience, as I suspect you will. As she shares her own story, you will see her go from, you know, ambitions of going into medical school, and how, as real life, as it does, stepped in and brought circumstances to her that made her take a different path, how she adapted to her career and to really creating the kind of life that she wanted for herself. She's also faced real adversity, and she does share that with us in the interview, and how both in the moment she allowed that to adapt the path that she was on, some of which was completely out of her control, and also how she can look back from where she sits today, years on from that challenge, and say, what has she learned, and how did that actually impact who she is as a business owner? So anyway, I think you're going to be in for a treat with her. As always, you can head over to pointroadstudios.com to see this week's original cover art, get the show notes with links to all the tools, books, resources, everything that Katie and I reference in today's episode, and how you can get in touch with Katie herself. I say with that, let us dive in to the show. Katie, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And it's so nice to have you here in the home studio on what is turning out to be a not so beautiful day, gray, rainy here in Hyattsville, Maryland. So I am so excited to share who you are and what you're about for listeners, because I'm such a fan of what you do and had to use this podcast interview as another chance to be like, and here's another idea. I have something that I can come to your studio to do. Can I do that? Great. So anyway, I'm so appreciative of what you're offering. So will you share for listeners a little bit about what it is that you do?
Sure. I own a sewing studio and fabric shop in Hyattsville. That's Maryland, for those that don't know, but I'm sure if they're listening to you, they know that. We offer a bunch of classes and workshops and kind of a, you know, an environment for people to come and work on their projects. But I also sell supplies and different items that you may need to create things.
Awesome. And so your shop is beautiful. I love it. I'm keep thinking like, I really need to learn how to sew more so that I have more reason to buy this gorgeous fabric and items that you're offering. But how did you get there? Like, what was the path that led you to create a sewing studio and fabric shop?
Well, I've been sewing for a very long time. And when I was working at a museum downtown, I was working with this other young woman who had studied fashion in college. Mm-hmm. And we kind of were commiserating about how much we didn't like working where we were working. And we really wish we could do something creative. And I had mentioned to her that I really had wanted to do something where people could come and create and maybe have a fabric store. And it was kind of like open, you know, it wasn't really like a concrete idea. And she had instantly said like, oh, I really want to do something like that too. And so it just kind of happened, probably over margaritas, to be honest.
Yeah, as so many wonderful things do.
And so we started kind of, you know, looking into options. And I really wanted to be in Hyattsville because it's close to home. It's really close to where my son goes to school. You know, it's a developing area. There's a lot of art things coming in. Mm-hmm. But at the time, there wasn't anything like what we were thinking about. And we live in a pretty, you know, big metropolitan area. And so for something like that to not be in existence, we really felt like it would succeed.
Yeah.
So we kind of just started pulling resources and probably jumped in a little bit faster than I'm used to jumping into things. And we only looked at one space and we were probably charmed by our landlord a little bit. But it seemed like too good to be true. The rent was right. You know, the deal was right. The area was right. And so we kind of just went for it. To be honest.
Okay. I have so many questions about that. So how did you even know the rent is right? Like, I'm thinking here you are both working in a museum. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your background for even having a perspective on like, what does it mean to get a lease for a brick and mortar space?
We probably didn't know. I think we were thinking that anything that was under a certain amount was okay. But the rent included utilities. It included internet. I mean, so it was one price and it was super affordable. Like, we figured if we did a few lessons in 1 month, I mean, we would be able to pay that, you know, and not have to worry about really too much overhead.
Got it.
My background doesn't necessarily... I mean, I don't have a background in finance. I don't have a business degree. I've always kind of run a business in the background, if that makes sense. I did own a kind of on the side part-time sewing business where I did like handbags and wallets and sewn accessories, and I sold them online, and I did craft fairs usually around Christmas time, you know, Mother's Day, that kind of thing. So I had some sense of what I could sell and, you know, profit and loss and kind of through that experience. So there is some sort of background there, but I do have a degree in chemistry, which is like not at all related to,
I don't know, anything. If you have a degree in chemistry, you can probably figure a lot of things out, says this humanities major. Okay. So wait, I want to come back into this space of you, how it is that you landed in this studio. But can you, like, because you've just dropped, like, you had this other sewing business, you were a chemistry major. Can you, like, give me the highlights of you did, then you also worked in a museum doing I'm not sure what. Like, what are these things that you did leading into this, kind of the highlights reel?
So, like I said, I went to college for chemistry. I had this idea that I would go to med school, and chemistry just kind of seemed easy to me. And I know that that sounds weird.
And the listeners go, gasp, what?
But, you know, it was something I had been interested in high school. And I just, it was like a continuation, basically, when I got into college.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had a lot of the credits already. And, but at the same time, I did change my major a few times. I was trying to figure out what I really wanted to do. And then I got married right out of college. Mm-hmm. And about 2 days before my wedding, also found out I was pregnant. So life kind of fast tracked.
Wow.
Basically.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you don't think like, oh, I'm going to get married, have a baby, and I'm still going to go to med school. It just did not work that way. So,
yep.
We basically were like, all right, so what are we going to do now? And my husband at the time was also just finishing up his master's in social work. So he had his like first, you know, real time job out of college. So I stayed home with my son and we lived with our in-laws.
Do you know we have that in common? Yeah. Anyway, so
I mean, I love my in-laws, but yeah, we lived with them for a year and, you know, it was a year too long. And so we then, you know, we bought a house.
All while this is like you live with them during throughout your pregnancy then.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's legit.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. Like I said, I really do love my in-laws, but it's totally different when you're living with, you know, people, especially when you're young and you're like just starting your life. And,
yep.
You know, you're really still, I mean, I was 22, 23, still basically trying to figure out like, what am I going to do? Like,
mm-hmm.
I have this degree in chemistry, but of course it's not something that just comes back to you, you know, so, and you also have mom brain. So forget it. Like, I probably couldn't even tell you the periodic table anymore after that. You know, the most basic of all chemistry things.
Yep.
So we lived there for a year. And when Isaiah was really little, you know, and I'm living with my in-laws, I needed something to do. So I started sewing again because I had sewn since I was a child. But I hadn't really gotten back into it until he was born. And so when he was, you know, taking naps and I was trying to, you know, bide my time while my husband was at work, because he actually worked still in D.C. and we were living up in Baltimore at the time. So that commute could be, you know, almost 2 hours sometimes.
Oh, wow.
So I would sew, and then people, I think this is also around the age of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, it was the age around Facebook, because when I had Isaiah, my husband disappeared for like 4 or 5 hours. And I'm like, where is he? And I'm in the hospital. I just had a C-section. And he comes back and he's like, oh, I was just posting all the pictures of Isaiah on Facebook.
Honey.
I'm like, you know, that's not how this works. Anyway, so I had started posting pictures of things that I was making and people, you know, were really interested, you know, to my surprise. And so I had started getting orders from friends and, you know, packing things up and I was selling them. And then when we bought a house, you know, kind of more of the same. Now I had my own space. I could sew more. I stayed home with Isaiah, so I would at least have nap time a little bit to sew. And, you know, I needed a little bit of an outlet. So it was my creative outlet to do that. And then my husband got sick. So that was really my creative outlet then.
Yeah.
It was the time that, like, I could have to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm 24, 25.
Yeah.
And so he was going back and forth into treatments. And, you know, when somebody else is sick, your focus is on them the whole time. You're not like focusing on yourself at all.
Yep.
So it was like some sort of release for me. And there were periods of time where he was healthy enough where I could still do craft fairs and stuff. And it was also kind of like a side income for me. So I was able to, you know, bring in a little bit of extra cash. I mean, he was still working, but I mean, there were times where he couldn't work. So this was a nice kind of thing for me to do for myself, but also to like provide for my family, like in a very, at the time, very small way.
Yeah.
So then he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like another change in your life. You're like, all right, now what do I do? Like, I have a 5-year-old child.
Mm.
I don't necessarily have to work at the time because, like, who's going to expect you to work? Yeah. But also, like, what am I going to do? Because
totally.
I don't have anything in my degree. You know, what do I want to do? So naturally, I'm like, well, I worked at this museum when I was in college. Maybe I can go back there. Like, yeah. I can be around other people. I know it'll be easy. So that's what I did.
Wow. Now, I mean, I'm taking in all that you're saying. The feeling I have as I'm like, literally have goosebumps is like, here is this like amazing human who's out there like creating a life with like a, I mean, not that the path isn't, you know, can't vary when you're still young and, you know, relatively new in your marriage and you have a young child and all these new things. And then like to be knocked over by something. And then just as you were describing, like, okay, well, like, here's something I have done. And like, I bet I could do that. And it's not overly taxing at a time that I probably don't want to be overly taxed. Like, here's this like human, like bouncing back up. And so I'm like, wow, like that's in my own work, resilience comes up a lot in terms of what does that mean? And to me, I'm always holding it as like this ability to come back to your own center and to actually move through the thing that's tough versus like, let me find just like, there is no going around it. I mean, it's so, wow. I'm like, so thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And I'm like, I can see now how the chemist is like jumps into something else because there's life that's happening in between to direct you there.
I mean, I think it happens to everybody. You know, there's something major that happens in somebody's lives. Unfortunately, it happened very early in my life. Yeah. But I mean, it's also unavoidable. So, I mean, I have a choice to either sit and be miserable and upset about it or like I can enjoy my life. Yeah. And so that was kind of, I mean, not to say it wasn't ever difficult or there weren't times where I'm like wanted to like just stay home and do nothing. But I also like very realized it was really important for me to be like around people and almost to that extent, like people that didn't really know my situation too.
Yeah.
Where like I could be like a regular person.
Yeah.
Not like a person where like everybody's like, are you okay? Is this okay? And it's just, I mean, it's lovely. You want people to be like that, but it's also very tiring.
Yeah.
Totally. So, you know, and it was a big part of my like grieving process, you know, trying to go through all of that. And so it was kind of like that work served a purpose for me to kind of just, it gave me time and purpose to try to figure out what was I going to do? Like, what's next? Because, you know, going back to the work at the museum that I worked when I was in college wasn't like my ideal, you know, life career, but it was something that was going to serve me in the meantime. And it did give me that space to figure that out. And it also provided me the opportunity to meet, you know, my future business partner.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's this kind of like road you're on and you kind of have to like be open to that happening because had I not made that choice to go back, I wouldn't have met her. And even though she's not part of the business anymore, you know, she moved to South Carolina. I mean, she's very integral in me starting this business and even having it.
Yeah, so. Totally. It's in some ways these things are like, oh, like what a strange occurrence. But I do, I'm so with you. Like, I feel like when you are in and open and like seeing, looking for like, how do these things connect? Yeah. It's like, oh, like that thing that could be viewed as like how I ended, like this being back, you know, backed into a job that's not that interesting to you is actually this great connecting point to launching something else.
Yeah.
Okay. more we could do here, but I'm feeling compelled to take us back to you guys being sweet talked or charmed by your, by your landlord.
Landlord.
Ah, it's all coming together now. So you're in the space, kind of seeing rent feels right. Mm-hmm. You can acknowledge, I mean, you do like you do. I mean, even the fact that you're using profit and loss, I know many people have businesses who are still like, what? So like you're dropping the lingo, Katie, you got it. but what was the process? You see one space, and then what?
So we see one space and I should mention that it's literally like a block away from my son's school and I can walk to it from my house, which is about, you know, a little over a mile. And we look into it and we're kind of looking around, and I wouldn't say it was ideal because it was on the second floor, but it was affordable. And we both really recognized that it was something that we could handle. You know, it wasn't going to put us under, even if we made no money and we both split it, you know, each month, it would have been maybe like a few nights out at dinner, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, like we knew that worst came to worst and we had to pay that off, then we would have been fine.
Yeah.
So it was also an old office building, so it needed a lot of work. He was like, well, I'll put in the floors for you. I'll paint the walls, whatever you guys want. Like, I'll do it. So, I mean, how do you say no to that, honestly?
Yeah.
And there weren't any really other businesses up there that were like ours.
Yeah.
You know, art related or craft, anything that would have, you know, been like symbiotic with ours. But we're kind of like, all right, well, we'll see how this goes. So within, I guess, basically a month of us seeing the spot, we were like on our way to opening our business.
Wow. So the space itself was really the catalyst then for, okay, we got the space. So now we're moving on. The business is happening. We have the space.
Yeah.
Okay. And were you resigning from your jobs, or were you still working and doing this?
The original plan was that, we would both still be working full time because now a single mom and I need health insurance, of course. So, and supporting a child that's going to private school. So I was like, well, I'll still work full time. She was kind of in the same position without the kids, but she, you know, she needed healthcare too. But we figured, you know, we can tag team it basically. Like, we'll get them to schedule like you one day and me one day, and we'll just, you know, maybe there's one day that we could figure out to be there together.
Mm-hmm.
So
like, as in, were you working part-time then in the, were you working part-time, you both working part-time in the other job, or were you?
No, we were both working full-time
like
in
9 to 5
museum job. And then we were each part-timing our new business, but like basically two halves make a whole, right?
Yeah. Two halves make a, did you have flexibility in hours in the
we
other business?
We kind of did. We could kind of say like, can we work this day? Can I work this day?
And, okay.
You know, it wasn't, and because it's a museum, they're open 7 days a week. So it kind of gave
got
us,
it. So this,
yeah, it's not like a 9 to 5 job were working at. Yeah.
Okay.
So that part gave us a little bit of flexibility.
All right.
Of. And then actually like 2 months after we opened, my business partner found out she needed to have back surgery.
Oh man.
So then, you know, I was kind of doing it now more like on my own.
Yeah.
So I decide, well, you know what? This is a little much. Like, I can't do both full time. I can't work at the museum full time and do this part time. Like, this is starting to eat up too much of my time, and I'm feeling like stressed. I'm feeling like this is not why I wanted to start a business.
Yeah.
Not that anybody goes into and says, I'm going to start my own business and I'm not going to be stressed.
Like, right.
I don't think those two things go together. But
yeah.
So then I kind of pulled back my hours to part time at the museum and started putting more time into the store. And it was really starting to get like a lot of traction, but our space was very small.
Yep.
And I was thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to run out of space. We can't have more than 4 people taking a class at a time. We don't have enough room for supplies. And again, charming landlord comes in.
I got a solution for you ladies.
Basically. And he's like, well, I have this space downstairs. He's like, you know, it's going to be probably at least twice the rent you're paying now, but you know, it's twice as big and it's street level with a big storefront.
Yeah.
So of course, at this point, again, I have like, I don't know. I guess I would say normally I'm a very calculated person and do a lot of research and make sure that all my ducks are in line before I jump into something. But apparently when it comes to this business, I'm just not, I'm like, okay, sure. Sounds great.
Solution. So I want to pause on this because I can imagine, like, I'm putting myself in this position. Okay. I've got, how old would your son have been at the time?
Of starting the business?
Yeah. Like, well, when your partner, you're starting the business and now your partner has back surgery.
8, 9.
Yeah. So like you have this little person who's in school You're working full time, and then I'm assuming in the evenings, coming in and doing, you know, some evenings, probably some day, some weekends, like you're working a lot.
Yeah.
Between getting the business launched and then, the full-time job you have. And, but you're like starting to like see good signs, it sounds like, in the business.
Yeah.
Then business partner has back surgery, and so she's kind of out of commission.
Yeah.
Right? You can recognize she needs to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Now, in this moment in time, I can imagine many people being like, okay, I just like you did, I need to make a change. This is too much. I'm feeling stressed. This isn't why I got into start a business. And therefore, I'm shutting this business down or we're going to just scale back what the business is doing now, but I'm keeping this like support of what I have and like what has been comfortable and that I know in the job, and especially at a time when the business partner is, you know, for understandable reasons, but like you're already starting to see, what happens when things like go off the off the rails? I'm doing a lot of work on this. What motivated you that your answer was, I know what I'll do. I'm going to go part-time at my job. I'm going to focus more. I'm going to focus myself on this business, and I'm even going to move into a bigger space. What's happening behind the scenes that's
the
move?
I don't know, but hearing you saying that out loud makes me feel like I'm awfully crazy.
No, I'm like, I don't know about crazy. I'm like, you are a badass. Like that feels like so tremendous and cool and inspiring to me to hear that you're doing that.
I guess one of my biggest fears was that someone was going to open this business and do the exact thing that I wanted to do before I did, and that I was going to really regret it.
Yeah.
And I saw the need, and I saw that it was growing, but because I couldn't really dedicate myself, you know, full time to it because I was working this museum job, I didn't think that it was at the potential that it could be. And I kind of felt like now or never. I mean, there's only one way to find out. And I kept saying to myself, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, to me, the worst that could happen would be somebody else would open this business, right? And then the other worst thing that could happen was I lose money because I'm investing, you know, my money in this. And then I thought, well, money's easy, right? I'm young. I can always work. I can always find something. I mean, I can always make money. I mean, if I have to Uber drive at some point or work McDonald's or go back to the museum or whatever, like, I could figure that part out.
Yeah.
I know I'll have a home, you know, I know I could get another job, but if I don't do this and somebody else does it, then I'm really going to kick myself. So that was kind of my like motivating factor.
Yeah.
And at no point in my like life otherwise have I ever been like that. But I felt like because I had that like strong conviction that this is exactly what I wanted to do, that I had to follow up on that.
Mm-hmm. What did it feel like? Like, I'm almost wondering, like, was there a physical sensation or an emotion that you couldn't shake? But like, what did it feel like to have that conviction that if you noticed it as being so different from how you felt previously?
I felt like there was not really hesitation.
Yeah.
You know, normally, like I said, anything else that I do, I kind of waver back and forth. I weigh all my options. I make lists, you know, is this going to work? Is this not going to work? You know, I'm calculating things, you know, the chemistry thing.
Yeah.
and, you know, apparently I've been like this since I was a child.
Yeah.
You know, I was a firstborn child. You know, I played a lot of sports. My dad even said, you know, there was a year that they didn't have a volleyball team. And so my dad said, play field hockey, but I had never played field hockey. But before I could try out, I practiced a million times to make sure that I could do it.
Yeah.
And so normally that's my MO. And this was very different than how I normally view and do things. And so I think for me, that was a sign that was like, no, this is the right thing. This is, you know, what you should be doing.
So I'm loving this. So can I call out a couple of things that seem really unusual to me? As somebody who's in her work, often working with people who either want to start a business or have started a business or going through some, it doesn't even have to be a business, like career move, like some kind of transition that they're in. And sometimes the transition is even growing the things like, like, do we move into the bigger space? This kind of thought habit that you were in of like, well, the worst thing that could happen is I don't get to do it. And around money, and like the other worst thing is losing money. But then like immediately, like you chime in to like, but I'm young, I could make money. It's like, you know, like there's another path through, like as you were describing. That is so unusual to hear someone who's in that kind of way of thinking around it. What I often hear people think is the thing that's really loud is money. That's almost always the case. And the reaction to money is like, you know, if I do this thing and it doesn't go well, I'm going to end up on the street. It's like, they immediately go to, well, like we don't make money. I've lost rent. I'm like, I can't pay my mortgage. Me and my family, or me, if you're on your own, like we're on the street, even though if they logically go through it, they're like, but I have all this support network and like there, I could drive Uber, but like the path of fear around money so quickly takes them to being homeless, which seems to be like such a trigger for people. So I just want to say out loud, like what this one, like anyone out there who's ever felt this way, like this thought habit of like, well, but I can make money like that. Like you have to have that way of thinking, I think, to allow yourself to go after something that's also risky, like, which in the end, you know, side, and this is my, last soapbox tangent on this. It feels risky to do something like that versus to be in the job. But the reality is the job is also risky. We just don't think of it that way.
Oh, so totally true. I mean, even if you're at a job that you feel secure in, I mean, especially in this day and age, you're one misstep away from not having that job.
Totally.
Or somebody, you know, better coming along. I mean, there, anything could happen. Your company could shut down, you know, you could get fired for something.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many things. And I just, for me, money's not everything. So I think because I don't view that as my number one priority, I mean, I think obviously I wouldn't be running this particular type of business if I also felt that way too. I mean, it's not incredibly lucrative, but I couldn't let that be the guiding fear of things. Because I think it's, you know, I get why you would be fearful of it. I mean, I was certainly, if I did not have family that I felt like I could just go live with for a little bit, or if I just didn't have the education where I didn't think that I could get another job easily. I mean, I understand that fear, but I also don't think it should be the guiding force to you not doing something that you really believe in and really want to do. And as another note, you know, after my husband died, I really felt like, well, obviously that's the worst thing that could happen. I mean, so the worst really in my whole life already has happened. I mean, like, what worse could happen of that? I'm sure something, but, you know, to me that was the worst.
Knock on lots of wood.
Exactly. But I also felt like, you know, he was really young. So, like, I felt, because when we were building our family, we were so focused on saving the money and being very careful and coupon clipping and, you know, not going out a lot and not really getting to experience things that we'd really like to do, because we were so focused on like what our future was going to be like. And not meaning to say that you shouldn't plan for your future, because obviously you should plan to be here for 100 years, but you know, that may not also be your reality. So you can't miss what's in front of you, you know, what you really want to do, because you're so focused on something that's not even here yet.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, preach, lady. Like this is, I mean, this is like core to what I believe. It's like you, to me, this whole idea of design yourself is, yes, you want to set a vision, but you, the bigger opportunity is to operate as a visionary, which means like, you can see that stuff in the future, but it's like, how does it impact what you're doing today? How do you lead? How do you interact with people? How are you bringing your values into what you do? And how do you get really present to it? Yes, integrating like the history and wisdom from where you're coming, but that like here where we are, like this is where it's happening. So you have to appreciate it. And I so identify when you're describing what it's like to be like, that's the worst, because I can remember having lost a sibling who was 2 years younger than I am today. And I, so it's, we're coming up on the 4 year anniversary. And I just remember like maybe like a month after he'd passed away, it was kind of in the haze and I was mm-hmm. with, I'm one of seven kids. So there were a lot of us to yeah. grieve his loss. And one of my sisters and I were walking through the mall, which just, you know, it's like, here we are numb in this yeah. space. And oh, I remember yeah, her just saying like, yeah. but you know, like the thing is, the worst thing happened, the most anxiety driving, like the thing that would, especially for this particular sibling, was like a something that she had imagined and that would create anxiety for her. Yeah. She's like, and now it's happened, but like, mm-hmm. we're still standing. Mm-hmm. So now what? And, yeah. and for me, the reaction was like, I remember, I regularly still come back to like, as a, you know, I can't bring him back and I can't lead my life based on him. Mm-hmm. And yet I feel like I'm in a positive way inspired by his death to honor yeah. like what oh, yeah. my own life.
Oh, exactly. That's exactly right. I mean, yeah. I share that exact same feeling. And I think, you know, maybe that's a very unique thing when you lose somebody that's very close to you, but it is kind of eye opening. And like I said, you can either take it as like, I'm just going to be numb and I'm going to be upset and I'm going to be angry, or like you can really go out and enjoy what's left of your life.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I'm like, man, I'm honoring the emotion. It's like, yeah, yeah. it's like big. So now you're in this business mm-hmm. and making money is not your number one priority. What is your number one priority?
Well, like I said, you know, when my husband was really sick, what was really important to me was having a space that like was for me, that like I felt good about creating things. And I think people that create often feel that way too. You know, you create something and somebody says, oh, that's beautiful. And you feel good. So I really wanted to create that for other people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I have, or I am in the process. You know, it's becoming this space where people can kind of like hang out, you know, they come back and show me projects they've made, or they, you know, ask for advice about what they're going to do. And just that feeling of seeing people realize that in themselves, that they're capable of doing that too, is just like a wonderful feeling.
Yeah. Totally. Well, I will say, and for all you listeners out there in the DC Metro, Hyattsville, Baltimore area, like come see the shop. It is totally that, I think, in practice. And I can remember going into the upstairs shop. And so mm-hmm. I fancy myself a creative person. Mm-hmm. I have a broken sewing machine, which one day I'm going to fix or get replaced. But I just loved the idea of having a sewing studio and like what you mm-hmm. could do with that. And did you know Ginger Roots? I think I might've talked to you about this before. They're RIP, no longer in existence, mm-hmm. but they awesome people. I think actually one of the women, was it two female co-founders, I think is going to be on the show. But anyway, they had a sewing studio in DC and they did a lot of tailoring. And so tailoring was the core of what they did. Mm-hmm. And then they would also have like a recycled fabric fashion line. And then they ended up bringing in local artists and they set up a shop. Anyway, they did lots of cool uh-huh. things in DC around where I lived in DC. And so when I came to Hyattsville I moved here around the same time that Three Little Birds started. And I remember, so out of curiosity, again, being like, oh, I still want to learn how to sew. And I still haven't done that, going into the upstairs yeah. shop when you were there.
So you're an OG.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember it was almost like a big hallway. Yeah. Like you walked in and it was like a large galley kitchen yeah. and like a very small selection of super kick-ass fabrics mm-hmm. on the left, and then the sewing machines. Yeah. And I remember asking about the sewing machines because even then a few years ago, I was like, my sewing machine's broken. So I still haven't solved this problem. Yeah. But anyway, seeing the sewing machines and just thinking like, wow, like it inspired in me, like I could bring friends in. We could do a class together. I can't mm-hmm. even remember if it was you or your colleague who I'd met, but I talked to somebody. And then when the space and then life was still happening around right. me, so that, so that I, the inspiration was there, but I wasn't coming. And now the space, you know, the last time I was in the shop was because I was walking by with my daughter who was unexpectedly out of school for a couple weeks, and we went, and now she has this mermaid fabric, which yeah. we are making. I'm sending it with her to her grandmother's when she's having an overnight there to turn it into curtains with their functional sewing machine. And, and I still, like, now when I'm thinking of dates that my husband and I can do, we're like, yeah, what could we go do as like a date at the sewing studio? Yeah. So this vision you have, I'm feeling assuredly is alive and well.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you noticed, like, what were your initial customers or people who were coming in doing, like, what were those people like when you were still in the upstairs space?
Well, you know, I think like in anything, there were a few naysayers, you know, or people that were curious, kind of like, what do you do here? Mm. Or, you know, the people that would say, I hope you do okay here. How are you doing here? You know, kind of surprised because, again, it's an area that's kind of coming into its own. And, you know, there wasn't really anything else where we were. And so I would say it was almost, there was more curiosity than anything. And then there were a bunch of people, I think, that were very excited that there was something cool and something fun for them to do. And so it was this kind of split thing. I mean, I wouldn't say that people were like flocking to us right away. It wasn't like we were, you know, opening the next Chipotle or something. But it was kind of this, well, this is nice, but I wish they had, you know, 30 more bolts of fabric, or this is nice, but they don't have regular hours yet. So it was kind of a lot of that. And so that, I would say, was a little discouraging, you know, in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, here we are really excited, but then there's all this, you know, discouraging vibes, I guess, you know.
It sounds even not like outright, like, what are you doing here? Yeah. But like the kinds of questions they're asking is like, mm-hmm. there's some unspoken things behind exactly. it that you were picking up on. Got
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, you know, I mean, I won't lie and say that that wasn't kind of like, oh, no, like, are we doing the right thing kind mm-hmm. of thing? But I think that the people that kept coming back and, you know, were really asking, that made me think like, all right, you know, people are into this. People want something like this. But I also really felt, you know, we need to kind of do this more full time. We kind of need to have regular hours. We need to offer a bigger selection. But how are we going to do this in this really small space that we literally just opened? So I would say that the reaction was really mixed. And I won't say like anybody was outwardly negative or mean, mm-hmm. But there was definitely some discouraging words.
Yeah. How long was it from when you were, how long were you in the one space before you moved into the bigger space?
6 months, 7 wow. months.
Yeah.
So pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think the major thing was once we started offering classes, we yeah. realized how limiting that space was.
Yep.
People couldn't come in and take a class and also shop for fabric. And again, we could only have probably 3 or 4 people sewing at a time. So it's not a lot.
Yep.
I mean, I don't really like to have very large groups, but to be limited to only 3 people per session and you only have 2 people working at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't really give you a lot of options.
Yeah. So you're in the bigger space now. You're offering classes. Yep. You do independent lessons, mm-hmm. as I know.
Yeah.
And what? So you grew in terms of offering. You grew mm-hmm. in terms of space. Were there mm-hmm. other ways that you were seeing growth happening?
Well, our inventory probably quadrupled, I would say. And, you know, yet, like you mentioned, the classes were growing. I was also able to bring in people that were like pattern designers or other like bloggers that would teach workshops for a full weekend. So I had the ability to bring, you know, fly somebody down for Boston, for example, who was a bra designer, and host a workshop of 8 women for 2 days. So that's something we wouldn't have been able to do in a smaller spot. So that bigger spot did that. And the other thing that's really happening is that there's other like businesses happening now. So that's been really great as far as growing my business, but it's also kind of building this really great community, not only just for the people that live here, but also just among us, local business owners. So mm-hmm. I have that support too.
Ah, got it.
That's been really nice.
And how does that manifest?
Kind of out of necessity. Hyattsville doesn't have a small business association. So I share a hallway with another business owner, Tanglewood. Mm-hmm. Now, Tanglewood Works. And we were discussing, you know, maybe we all need to get together and kind of brainstorm and how do we get people to come to Hyattsville and shop and buy and want to stay and want to come back. And so kind of naturally, I guess, we just started talking to other business owners and we formed the SoHi Collective. So we have been having pretty regular meetings and trying to figure out, is it worth it to run events or advertise together, you know, and it's really just a great resource for each other, I think, to bounce off business ideas and problems you might be having and that kind of
yep. thing. Yeah. Awesome. So good. Well, what's next for you and Three Little Birds Sewing Company?
I think that, you know, right now we're closed 2 days a week. So short-term goal is to try to get to 7 days a week open and having some staff. Mm-hmm. I've been running mostly by myself with, you know, help here and there from a few friends and summer interns, basically. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the short-term goal is to really be able to have extended hours because mm-hmm. we've gotten a pretty good regular hours now, but I would really like to be able to, you know, appeal to more people. Mm-hmm. And I think long-term goal being in a bigger space. Mm.
My gosh, where next?
I mean, I still want to be in Hyattsville. I mean, I love being here. I love this community. I love the support. I love being close to home and being close to my family. And, but, you know, even in this new big space, it still feels kind of small now. I mean, yeah. I think that feels that way anytime you grow into something. But I would like to have like a separate classroom area and that kind of thing.
Oh, I love it. That is badass visionary. It's awesome. Well, I know that I want to be respectful of your time. Tell me, what does it mean to you to lead a well-designed life?
Ah, the infamous question.
I know. You knew it was coming.
I think that it means to kind of take the positive things that are happening in your life and let them be in your driving force instead of the negative things. Mm-hmm. I think we as human beings always tend to focus on the negative first. And I think that a lot of fear comes from that. So I think if you lead with the positive and use the negative as a learning or just kind of as a speed bump, you know, rather than a wall, I think that you can really, you know, live the life that you imagine for yourself and where you want to be. And even if it's not what you imagine your life to be, I mean, I feel like I'm certainly not where I imagined my life to be, but I feel like I'm in a very good place. And so I think finding that balance too is really important.
Man, drop the mic. Awesome. Yes. Oh, I'm like, yes, underscore. So well said. Tell our listeners where they can come see the shop, find out more about you, connect with you, even if they're not here.
Yeah, cool. So if you're local in the Maryland, DC area, or even Virginia, you can find us right off of Baltimore Avenue in Hyattsville, Maryland. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at threelittlebirds.sewingco, and it's three spelled out, not the number three. And you could also email us at threelittlebirds.sewingco@gmail.com.
Yay. And I'll put links to all of those things and the website and all that good stuff on the show notes. So you guys can find it there. Thank you so much. I knew it would be, but this has just been pure delight. Thank you so much.
I'm
so grateful.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. That is a wrap for today's show. How rad is she? Oh, I just so enjoyed my time with Katie, and I trust that all of you have enjoyed your time here in the interview with her as well. Before closing, I did want to share how we can stay connected beyond the podcast, give a few shout outs, and give you a little bit of a sneak peek into what's coming up in next week's episode. For show notes with links to tools, books, all that good stuff that we talked about in today's show, you can head over to pointroadstudios.com. You can also, in the show notes, you'll be able to see all those links to Katie's information. So her Instagram and Facebook at Three Little Birds Sewing Co., the address for the shop in Hyattsville, and how to email her, the website, all that good stuff. So you can find all of that in the show notes. While you're on the site, look for our subscribe button where you can join our newsletter. That in that way, you can stay up to date on all of the latest and greatest from the podcast, interviews, all of our content over here aimed at spreading the design yourself spirit, including details on that webinar series that I shared at the top of the show. And as always, if you like what you heard on today's show, please do help me spread the word, tell your friends, tell people that you think will be positively impacted by it, and head over to Apple Music to subscribe to the show and leave a written review. That helps in the algorithms that be in the podcasting world. So I would really appreciate you doing that. Coming up next week, you know, it's Thanksgiving week, y'all, if you can believe that. So I am doing a repeat of the show that I did last year. Although when I say repeat, I should say it will be a new show, but I'm taking the same content in the Let Us Give Thanks episode I did last year, but this time it's take two. And the structure of the show is me asking questions, and the questions will be the same. But we are all new this year. So whether you've never listened to that episode before, not to worry, just join up with this one and that will be just fine. And if you listened last year, as I know many of you have, then this is a chance to come back to those questions with new eyes. So let us give thanks. That's the focus of next week. And in that spirit, let me give thanks before I close to Colin Phillips for his skilled audio engineering and interlude music, to John Flannery for his cover art design, to the Dismemberment Plan for the show's intro and outro music from one of my personally most favorite songs in the world, Following Through, and as ever, to you. You guys make the show come to life because you're the ones who are listening. Big thank you for being here and part of the show. I am wishing each of you a most beautiful week. I'm about to head out to Florida for the coming week, which I'm pretty excited about since it's been very rainy here in Washington, D.C. And until next time, no matter where you are, remember, there is nothing stopping you. So go on ahead and get after whatever it is that you really want.